At about the same time, I came across the book that was written by my guest, my first guest. I was checking out a new podcast called The Tidal Year. It's a podcast about swimming, especially in oceans or lakes or rivers or streams, by Freya Bromley, who is a writer and a wild swimmer. I don't know if it's just me, but there seems to be a trend for humans to want to reconnect with water, often beyond the confines of a chlorinated pool. And about the same time as I was listening to that podcast, I was reading Small Bodies of Water, which is a collection of essays, mostly water-focused, by a New Zealand-born but now living in London writer Nina Meyer-Powles. And Nina's on the line from the other side of the world now. Kia ora, Nina.
Hi, kia ora.
Lovely to have you on. Did you know you were writing Small Bodies of Water when you began writing the essays that make it up?
No, I didn't actually. Some of them are quite a lot older than the rest of the book. I was just writing them piece by piece because as well as being a poet, when I first started out writing, I started with creative nonfiction and like personal essays. And so I was really playing with the form, and I realized quite quickly that I kept writing about water and swimming and the sea and kept coming back to it. And then I thought maybe I'm writing something longer than I thought.
Where did you first learn to swim?
So I first learned to swim when I was probably about 5 or 6, and I was living with my parents in New York City, actually, and there was an aquatic center nearby, and I remember going there every weekend, but I kind of hated it. I think it was quite a stress. I was quite anxious about every session, but I have always loved swimming outside of a sporty context because I'm not a sporty person. So after kind of initially finding it quite scary, I realized I really feel more myself when I'm swimming, and I think I always have since I was really little.
The first essay talks about swimming in a pool in Borneo, a swimming pool, I think. It wasn't a wild pool, was it?
No, yeah, that's a swimming pool, quite a small one, in a golf club where my gonggong, where my grandpa is a lifelong member of the golf club. So we'd always go there every time we're in Malaysia, my cousin and I. So that's a really important swimming pool because I think I'm interested in swimming not just in the sea and rivers and lakes, which I love as well, but also swimming pools and how they're really important in my memories.
What is your connection to Borneo? Are your family, some of your family from there?
Yeah, so my mum was born there in Kota Kinabalu in Malaysia, and so she grew up there, and she came to New Zealand when she was 17, I think. And so, yeah, so half my family comes from there, and my grandparents lived there all through my childhood. So it was a place we would frequently be going back to every few years. Not a place I've ever lived, though, and so not a place I grew up, but a constant place I'd always be returning to.
You grew up in Wellington, and actually it's interesting. I was trying to date some of the quakes because you write about water, but land gets in there as well, particularly the earthquakes of Wellington in that second essay, and their link sometimes between quakes and tsunami. And I was trying to date, thinking, I wonder which quake that was and whether I felt that one. Certainly one of the ones I could spot was, I think, the Kaikoura quake, but you weren't in the country for that one, were you?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. So I write about quite a few different quakes, and I think there was a big one in, I say big, but it was a big one in terms of Wellington hadn't seen a big one in a while. That was, I think, 2013. And I was in Wellington at that time. And then there was the Kaikoura one. And I was actually living in Shanghai then. I was studying Chinese in Shanghai. And I remember being in my dorm room and kind of just scrolling through Twitter, and everyone's suddenly tweeting earthquake and GeoNet pops up. And the feeling of that was really, really strange and really scary. And so it's something I've written about a few times, actually, the experience of being far away when something like that happens.
It would have been around about, what, 7 or 8 or 9 in the evening when the news, because it was the middle of the night here.
Yeah, I can't quite remember, but I do know that I was up. It must have been, yeah, because I was up for most of the night listening actually to Radio New Zealand and just getting all the updates through the live stream, which was a bit patchy with the crappy Wi-Fi in my dorm room. But I knew that my family were fine. My parents were okay, but there was still that tsunami warning for Wellington.
There was.
And so everyone was waiting.
Whereabouts were your parents living at the time?
Yeah, they were in Wellington, so they were in Eastbourne where they live now, still same house actually.
And is that a house close to the sea?
It's right on the edge of the beach, okay. Yeah, so they just went up the hill.
They would have.
And thankfully, yeah, everyone did, I think.
Lots of people did, because there was, I mean, it was big enough and there was enough information from some of the tidal buoys that are in the water along the coast of the South Island near the epicentre to suggest that, oh, something's going on here. And then I remember, and you might have even been listening to this in Shanghai, mm-hmm. that I think it was Simon Morton, who used to host a program called This Way Up, and he lived down on the south coast, and he said, oh, the water's sort of headed out, it's kind of receded, and that's the kind of thing that sometimes happens with a tsunami. So, yes, everybody was going up the hills, including, I guess, your mum and dad.
Yeah, and it was really strange because, as I write about a little bit in the book, the idea of a tsunami coming and kind of seeing the sea recede, that it's a kind of an anxiety of mine that I've often like thought about growing up by the sea, but it's not something I've ever experienced. But then it was happening, but very far away. So I had all these kind of terrifying images in my head of what might happen. So I was interested in writing about what this felt like from a distance and growing up by the sea and how that affects us.
I mentioned Freya Bromley's podcast, The Tidal Year, and the episode I listened to was an interview with another writer, Jessica L. Lee, I think was her name, mm-hmm. and she wrote a book called, I can't remember what it was called, but it was she was living in Berlin, and I think she was going through a bit of a rough patch, and she decided, I'm going to swim in try and swim in as many lakes, because Berlin's surrounded by lakes, as I can in a calendar year. And that's what they were talking about. And I noticed that that book gets a mention in yours. You must have been reading it too.
It does. I love that book. It's called Turning.
That's right.
And yeah, and I discovered it a couple of years ago, and it had a really profound impact on me. It was the first time I'd read a book that was a book about water, first of all, and about swimming, that's also by someone who's half Chinese like me. Jessica is Taiwanese-Canadian, and she's also British. And she's actually one of my best friends now, so it's really special that you mention her because she's so important to me. And she, though, is another type of swimmer, not like me. She cracks the ice. She goes out with a hammer.
Yes, that's right. Well, when she said she did it for a whole calendar year, I'm immediately thinking, okay, right. Well, it gets pretty cold in Berlin in January and February.
It does, yeah. I'm more of an autumn swimmer. I've not yet gone through the winter, but every year Jessica asks me, are you going to keep going? And and we'll see. Maybe this year's the year.
Where do you swim in London?
Yes, I'm really lucky. I live near Hampstead Heath, and I didn't know this about London before I moved here at all, but there's a couple of swimming ponds on Hampstead Heath, and they're open all year round. And when I first heard about this, I literally pictured a pond, right? Like, it doesn't sound great, but it's actually a lake, really. And they're really beautiful, kind of quite high up in the trees. And so I go there a few times a week, and that's kind of how I have coped through lockdown and stuff.
coped what with? What was the hardest thing to cope with for lockdown for you?
Yeah, I think, well, it was a really strange experience. And I think it was the fact that last year we had, I think, three lockdowns, and it was quite a cyclical repeating experience, and it felt as if they weren't necessarily working as effectively as they could, and the messaging was so confusing at times, and there was a real sense that the government was determined to do really the minimum possible to protect people. And so I think at the same time the rest of the world felt, I think, the furthest away that it's ever felt. And of course Aotearoa is really far away from here, but not being able to get there quickly was really hard. That said, you know, I was safe, I was healthy, and so it's been all right, but it has been a really strange 18 months. And the way that things have slowly opened up again and then we've kind of retreated back into lockdowns, I think it's just created so much uncertainty about what the future holds.
I know those ponds and I know Hampstead Heath, but I possibly don't go to the one you go to because I think it's the ladies' pond. And I'm pretty sure it's ladies only, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I swim at the mixed pond too, yes, which is nice, but the ladies' pond is my favourite and it's the most kind of secluded, and it's such a lovely communal atmosphere.
What is it about getting in the water and swimming that helps you?
I think it gives me a bit of clarity that I very often don't find on land. And something happens, I think, getting into the water. My brain sort of can't think about the stresses of the day, can't really think about work when you get in very, very cold water. Even now, it's not particularly cold, but it is still colder than a swimming pool. So still a part of you adjusts, of me anyway, when I get under, my body kind of resets itself. And I think, I don't particularly love exercise. I don't do it for exercise. I do it more for pleasure. And I think I feel a lot stronger underwater than I do on land.
Why did you move to London, Nina?
Yeah, it's not a place I actually ever thought I would move to, but my partner's from here. So we met when we were both living in China, and he's from here. So that's how I ended up here.
Now, that reminds me of something else that I really like about each of the essays, and that is that towards the end of each one, you have a little Mandarin-less lesson. Basically, you'll talk about a character and how it might be related to another character. And I found that, even though I'm not a linguist at all, I really enjoyed that. And it got me thinking about how, if your language is built on characters in that way, whether it changes the way you relate the world.
I think it may well be. I think something that happens, though, and I'm definitely guilty of this too, being not at all fluent in Mandarin, but being a kind of lifelong learner of Mandarin, is we do tend to sometimes, as outsiders, romanticize the Chinese language, or not just the Chinese language, but kind of any languages that use ideograms and characters, because they're so different from our alphabet. So I was kind of conscious of that at the same time as writing about how I practice writing them over and over again, and the images became really important, and learning to take the character apart, which really helped me as a language learner, you know, finding, like in my name, a sun and a moon, those kind of connections was really helpful. But I also wanted to reiterate that I'm just a language learner, not an expert in any way, and that there are other ways we can have relationships to languages, especially heritage languages, that's not necessarily fluency, but maybe kind of a physical knowledge or physical memory in our bodies.
Another thing that I thought about reading your essays was the references from afar of back to Aotearoa, New Zealand. And I was thinking about water, because tangata whenua here will talk about, Māori will talk about, well, what's your maunga, what's your mountain? And what's your awa? What's your river? Iwi, what are your people? And there was something about some of the stuff you wrote that made me think that you might think about a particular body of water as a place that you have a strong connection with.
Yeah, I think there are a few places, but if I had to pick one at the moment, it's probably Wellington Harbour, which I've swum a lot in and partly grew up next to. And just I think my favourite thing about Wellington is how it's surrounded by water, and the city kind of curves around this beautiful body of water. When you're swimming in it, it feels almost enclosed because of how narrow the harbour entrance is. And the fact that whales come in every now and then, and we kind of, in delight, we go and chase them with our cameras to take pictures of them. I love that. So I think that's my body of water.
Nina, it's been lovely talking with you. Thanks so much for your time this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. That's the author of Small Bodies of Water, Nina Mingya-Poles.